Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Please be advised.
Spoiler alert episode. Spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Oh, everybody, welcome to
the Detroit spoiler alert episode.
Spoiler up number 61. So we've done over 440 some episodes total if you add them up.
Wow, that's a lot of episodes. 381
regular eps, 61 spoiler eps. I put that at 442, if I'm not mistaken, which is halfway to 884.
Wow.
And then there's a couple other paid ones in there.
You know what? I think that's plenty.
I think it is. I really think it is.
And considering the fact you've seen two movies at least per episode at probably $18 a clip on those films at the theaters here in Hollywood, you essentially have
are losing money.
Losing money.
Well,
yeah,
true. Well, there's no doubt about that. But you've kept one production house somewhere in Hollywood afloat.
Yes.
You have been the sole benefactors for some right. small like boutique fucking movie maker.
Yeah.
Good for you guys.
Yeah. And Annapurna should thank us for sure.
Anyway. Well, folks, that's the sweet, sultry sounds of Mike Schmidt.
Oh, I always talk before I'm introduced. Sorry.
It's all right.
It's all right. No,
people
it's
can
fine.
Read the description. It's not weird. It's not radio. Yeah. It's
well,
not live
I've been
radio.
On shows where you have to literally sit there for 9 minutes until they say, hey, and by the way, our guest today is, you know, sitting
well,
here
they
patiently.
Well, they don't know how the fuck a, they don't know how podcasts
Do
work.
Do they make you, you see the person's wait outside name? The room?
Sometimes I've been outside the room. Sometimes I've actually, you've been in the room. And look, don't put me in front of an open mic and expect me to shut the fuck up. I mean, you should, because I'm your guest right. on your show, and I'll respect your laws and rules. But
this is a sovereign nation, by the way. This Comedy Film Nerds is its own, it's a city state.
Well, you made me
like
salute
Singapore.
The flag when I walked in, and I said, all right.
Well, we have a little more, we have a few more rules in world building than Dark Tower did.
Yes.
I'll tell you that.
We're not doing a Dark Tower spoiler up.
The movie itself is a spoiler up.
Yes.
Because your whole afternoon is spoiled.
Yes. Awful.
Nobody's ever done that kind of wordplay on this show. Good night, everyone. Take care of yourselves. Please drive safely. I know you're all driving listening to this.
Yes.
Salute the CFN flag on your way out.
Your national anthem's catchy.
We're going to do a Detroit spoiler up.
If you want to give the rules?
The rules are this. Each guy's got 5 minutes. Yeah. Guy with the most. Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
That's Thunderdome.
Sorry.
Yes.
I just had a game show host audition. What are the most points in the next round? Gets advanced.
Hands on buzzers.
Hands on buzzers. 10 grand to the winner. It is. Here's the rules. If you've never listened to a spoiler up, we're going to go into the key details of the film, including the ending, all key plot points. Nothing is off the table. So if you have not seen this movie and don't want it spoiled for you, you need to hit pause and go to the movie theaters and watch it.
So nothing's off the half moon, Mike.
All right.
The half moon. Full disclosure, I haven't seen this movie.
All right.
Oh, you have. You've lived it. Sadly, you live
you've
it every 3 weeks.
Yeah. You've seen the news footage.
Yeah, that's still happening today in America.
Yes.
All right, guys. So it's directed by Catherine Bigelow. She teams up again with writer Mark Boal. They did Zero Dark Thirty, and they did The Hurt Locker together. And the trailer looked awesome to me. You guys very much liked it on the regular episode.
Yes.
The thing I want
to... I'm going to change my mind on this episode.
<You flip
out.
laughs>
I couldn't even say it. God damn it, a man.
When I was sitting in the lobby for 6 minutes before we recorded this, I thought, you know
it's
what?
It's a bait and switch to get him on the spoiler. Yeah. I hated this fucking movie anyway.
Yeah. What a
poorly
log.
Put together. Didn't make sense.
Would
I didn't
never
believe
happen.
It for, never. Yeah, didn't believe it for a second.
So unbelievable.
Yeah. Never been a fan of Bigelow.
Yeah. Now, I will say this when we started at the ending. Remember at the ending, a graphic came up and said some of the events have been fictionalized because we honestly don't know everything that happened during the events of this
right.
evening.
They had to put it together with the accounts of the people who were in the room.
Right. And so here's the one thing I thought that may have been Hollywoodized. And I want to see what you thought about this. There is a scene in the film where they're playing basically kind of like the murder game with the suspects, where they take a guy into a room, they pretend to shoot him and tell him to keep his mouth shut to scare the other suspects into getting information.
Just the phrase murder game is so perfect.
Right.
Because that's what they called it, and you're like, you monster.
Yeah, horrifying. Yes. That you have something and you've named it.
It has a title.
Yes, that you've named this. So it happens twice, but then they tell one of the other rookie cops to take another guy in and go in. They're like, oh, you haven't killed one yet. You go in and kill one. And he actually does kill one of the suspects. And he says, oh, it felt weird. And like they're like, what are you talking about? And the other cops are like surprised when they've already been, you know, murdering people before that.
Yeah.
So but felt like did that, like that specific thing, like was someone murdered on a misunderstanding of the murder game?
That
stretched to me a little
bit. I see what you mean, Hollywood eyes, too, because I mean, but because if you're going to go extrapolate it that way, even when they're roughing up suspects and doing stuff all movie, that dude is giving furtive glances and furrowed brows and rubbing his head like, I'm not on board with any of this.
Right.
And then he shoots a guy with a shotgun at point blank range. You're like, really? That guy flipped now? I mean,
yeah.
Because you get the peer pressure. We alluded to it in the original episode of this week's show when you said the fact that the main cop, becomes, everybody follows him and becomes in charge. And I said that thing where I was like, you know, if people don't make missteps, if one person does the right thing, none of this shit happens.
Right.
Well, that's also a testament to, if you walk in acting like you know what's going on and you assert yourself, people will follow you and do what you say.
Right.
It just immediately became the Stanford Prison Experiment, because then the National Guardsmen are beating people up and they're all following his lead. Mm-hmm. And he's just a rookie, like main fucking patrolman. He's been on the job like 2 years or whatever.
He's still in uniform.
Yes.
Yeah, he hasn't made it to detective.
Was the character's name David Senak? Because that was the actual cop that it was named after. I mean, that's the actual cop.
Yeah, no, I don't think they used his real name. Honestly, the names are a little blurry because it's a lot of shouting and yelling and a lot of slurs and shit like that.
Right,
so I'm trying to figure out who was who, and then I went to IMDb, and luckily they had that dude's picture with the cop that
he
played.
Who was the Maze Runner kid.
Yeah, exactly. He's a guy, and I'll tell you what, he seemed really familiar to me. And I thought to myself, well, I've seen this guy in other stuff. And then I looked at his IMDb credits. I've never seen a movie this dude was in, so I don't know why he seems so familiar to me.
Oh, he's been in a bunch, but I'm trying to find him. It was the main cop. No, it wasn't him. So, Aaron, we'll need your help. Who was the main cop in
Detroit? It Will Poulter? Was that the actor?
That's the actor. Yeah. I don't remember the name of the character, though. That's the thing.
Krause was the name of the character.
Krause, that's the name that they used, yeah.
That's him, yeah.
See, and he was originally slated to play Pennywise. In it.
Really? Oh, he,
you see that?
Because he's got a creepy look about him. There's no question.
He's in War Machine.
Yes.
You know, he's in The Revenant.
We're the Millers.
Yep.
That was, well.
He's been around. He's done a lot of stuff. So he apparently. Well here's why.
I'm sure he doesn't want to be known as the kid from The Maze Runner.
No, absolutely not.
But the reason I bring it up is they did an article in the LA Times about a week or so ago to. Giving a whole sort of preview of Kathryn Bigelow in this movie.
Do we need to tell people what Detroit is, or they know if they're listening to the spoiler episode? They already fucking know. Like,
the whole story. Give a little quick synopsis, I guess, of what it is. So,
it kind of the
it's
thing
an
that
actual
we,
event. It was a it's 3-day an riot event. In Detroit, 1967.
But Mike was saying before, like the second act of the film is basically this incident at the Algiers Hotel where basically a toy gun, a flare gun goes off because a starter pistol is messing around. They think it's a sniper. So then all of the cops descend upon this hotel. And then they start looking for the pistol. They can't find it. They throw everyone up against the wall. And then basically the murders start happening. But the first
in real life,
half,
3 men died.
Yes.
Well, they psychologically torture and beat everybody in this
everybody,
hotel.
Everybody in the hotel.
Men, indiscriminate, young. Wow. They don't care. They're just
two white girls.
A white girl turns around, gets a gun butt to the head.
I mean,
and then at the end of the movie, we get an actual photo of her. She still has the scar on her head in a photo of a graduation photo. I mean, it's insane. So they don't discriminate. Everybody gets it.
No, yeah, it's brutal. What's interesting and what is her great filmmaking is the way the stage is set for this incident to happen. Like, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. You see the riots. You see the unrest. You see all of these things unravel in Detroit that lead up to this incident. You see the corrupt cop. Before this incident happens, he's already shooting at a suspect running away, and the suspect bleeds out under a car from a shotgun wound. So.
And I have a question about that. Again, because also, like I said, there's all those signposts where you go, if this guy would have done the right thing, none of this happens. Because Krause, this cop, there's a guy looting groceries. He shoots him in the back with a shotgun.
Yes.
The guy hops a fence and gets away, and then he bleeds out to death in a car, under a car. So then they go to the station house, and it's such pandemonium because they have so many rioters, all this. A homicide detective calls Krause in, gets his statement, and then says, I'm recommending murder charges. You don't shoot a man in the back when he's running away from you.
Yeah, I'm recommending murder charges. And then he says,
get back out on the street.
Get back out on the street,
And so he turns loose, because again, essentially what you've done is you've said, hey, look, that guy goes, I have no future anyway. So I have carte blanche to go start murdering everybody.
I'm
going to
charge you with murder, and then go out on the street and do your job.
But they're so harried and they're so overworked. Yeah. I mean, they're calling people in for triple shifts. He just lets the guy go back on the street and go to work.
You see the overcrowded police stations that are just filled with black people. Like, literally.
Sitting on the floor. They're all in handcuffs. Whose prisoner is this? You know, nobody knows.
They can't even walk through. It's so jammed in the police stations. So you have to do that to set the stage for the story. It was like so perfectly done.
So we get all the tension and horror of that, but then we also get all the hope, and we immediately like Larry. We love the band. We love the characters. You empathize with them instantly because they have their dreams stolen from them in an instant because of the riots and things that are happening outside.
And they're trying just to live their lives.
Right.
That's all they're trying to do. They're not looting.
They're not in any sort of trouble. They wind up on a bus that gets besieged by looters and people riot.
And they have to get off.
And so then they go to the motel. They get a room for $11. And then they just start hanging out at the pool. And they meet, like, the white girls. And they meet some other people. Like, nobody knows one another. Mm-hmm. There's a group of, like, four dudes who are friends. But everybody else is just at the motel kind of holing up and partying and having some fun and avoiding all the chaos in their neighborhood. And then one guy fucks around, shoots a starter pistol, and then that's it. The cops come over and bust it. And so, and you're already invested in all of the lives of everybody in the hotel. You know who they are. They're from Ohio. These people are from here. These guys, you know. And there's also a great scene upstairs where you can see, it essentially tells you what it means to be African American in Detroit. The guy says they do a little play with the starter pistol where he pretends that he's angry at his friend for eating one of his hot dogs, and then he shoots him. And everybody freaks out. Then he goes, now you know what it's like to be us. Because he does the whole white cop, hey, what are you doing on my street, N-word, whatever, and da-da-da. And it's brilliant because it shows you what they live with every day in that town. And then they're fed up. You can get a whole lot of whataboutism where you go, oh, well, they shot the starter pistol. They kind of asked for this kind of shit to happen. Don't do dumb shit. You won't want dumb shit to happen to you.
And you wonder, too, like, what if the cops, when they came in, they would have found the starter pistol right away? That was one of the things that escalated the tension in this incident. Was they were searching, they couldn't find it. None of the suspects knew where it was. And they're like, well, we have a sniper here. We got to find a gun. So those cops were not leaving until they found the gun.
And I know that mentality of, well, why didn't one of them just say it was a starter pistol and somebody shot it? But at the same time, you know, these people are just living their lives. And these cops descend upon them, start beating them, throw them into a wall. Why would you help them? Why would you ever come across and do any? It's literally war. It's you against them.
Like, you know, the only guns that are in here are the ones you guys brought.
Yep.
You know, the suspect that did shoot the starter pistol, he's the one that panicked first, and he's the first murder of the night, gets the shotgun.
Well, he literally comes running down the stairs. He's completely unarmed. He turns a corner, and Krause shoots him through a glass door again in the back.
With probably the same shotgun.
Jesus.
And then plants a knife next to his body.
Right.
Because he didn't get to plant evidence on the other suspect who he shot that bled out into the car.
Right.
Well, it's good that that's not still happening today, and now there's video camera footage of just cops planting shit. It's unbelievable. The only difference between today and then is now everyone's got a camera. It still doesn't mean cops are convicted. They still get goddamn acquitted. Like the Philando Castile case, you watch the video footage on that. Here's a legal gun owner. Curious that the NRA didn't jump to his defense. Legal gun owner and says to the cop, pulled over for a busted taillight, hey, man, I'm a gun owner. The cop says, all right, just show me your ID. Reaches in as instructed, and the cop shoots him and goes, why did you do that? So this kind of shit has been going on for fucking ever. And before video, you would have said, oh, well.
And this is before, too, there were guns everywhere in every neighborhood.
Right.
Like you literally, they were walking this incident. They were looking for one gun.
Right.
And then there was literally no other guns in the entire hotel. Mm-hmm. You know, if that happened today, there'd be guns everywhere.
Right, because they're easier to get now.
Right.
You can buy them on the internet.
So the way this film escalates and the way the film doesn't let you off the hook is another great way that this film was put together. Like, is the tensions mount, like you have National Guard. And Mike, when we were talking about earlier, is if one person had done the right thing, everything would have de-escalated. Mm. And it did not, because the state troopers came out to assist the Detroit police. And one of the state troopers came out and goes, man, it's not right what's going on in there. And the state troopers look at each other
and go,
torturing
suspects. They're beating people.
Yeah, they're beating people. And they look at each other and literally go, well, we don't want to get involved in a civil rights issue. And they literally just leave.
The stateies leave.
Wow. Well, I mean,
because they could have put a stop to it.
There's a Detroit PD situation. We don't want to get involved in a civil rights situation.
Yeah, because they literally could have stopped it and probably saved at least two of those murders.
Well, that's the thing, too, to relate as it goes to today. So I just read an article and actually did a video on it. So the Chicago Police Department has been responding to with mental illness, like someone is suffering from mental illness and they have a gun or a knife with the SWAT team. So what this doesn't surprise me, because this is how our police departments have become more and more militarized now. Now, if this were to happen today, it wouldn't just be cops and maybe riot gear. They show up in full battle armor and tanks like they're in goddamn Baghdad. And this is why this movie is so relevant. Is it shows...
Because criminals and mental patients, too, now can have... It's a possibility they have automatic weapons.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because you can just buy one online.
Yep.
So it's but I want to go into... since this guy, Sneak, the cop, or Senek, none of these cops ever served any jail time or anything.
No.
Well, they wind up...
So how did they handle that at the end?
And that was the third part of the movie where Mike's right. Like, after you follow, like, that situation, the standoff in the hotel... When you go into now the jury and the trial and
a very
the
lumpy John
arguments.
Krasinski shows up.
I didn't even recognize him at first.
Who
I was like,
he?
Is that John Krasinski?
The guy from the office.
I know. He's playing the movie.
He's one of the attorneys.
He's the union lawyer for the cops.
Oh. Right. And I'm like looking at him like, that is the guy from the office.
It almost looked like he was wearing an ill-fitting fat suit.
Right.
He just looked weird.
He did look weird. I don't know. It'd be funny if that was actually prosthetics to look like the actual
guy. I was wondering.
Guy in
history. Well, I mean, because that's what I meant in the lumpy. Yeah. I mean, it just looked odd.
So, Aaron, can you look that up? Was John Krasinski wearing prosthetics for Detroit? So,
the real guy, by the way, is still alive. And the reporter from the LA Times went because he's
the real cop.
The real cop.
One of the real cops. The ringleader guy, Krause.
Yeah.
Because there's three main terrible cops.
Right.
So David, the character that Krause is based on, is still, he's living in the suburbs of.
We get that at the end on the title card.
Really?
They never, they tell us, they go, you know, they show you everybody involved. And they say those guys never, they were all acquitted. They never served a day in jail for it. But they
were all taken off.
They never returned to active duty. And one of them was, a civil suit was filed against him, and he had to pay $5,000.
Right. That was it.
Wow. And so he's still alive, and he's living outside of Detroit. When a reporter for the LA Times went to go talk to him for this specific article, he slammed the door in her face.
Wow, that's weird that he wouldn't have anything to say.
Yeah, he's still an asshole.
Yeah.
Well,
murdering asshole.
But right, yes, he's a terrible monster and awful. But maybe he's spent the last 50 years drinking and trying to forget the fact that he was a monster as a young man and has no interest in having a scab torn off and revisiting the fact that he was such a terrible monster who ruined so many people's lives.
Maybe. Maybe he's like, fuck him, I was doing my job.
Could be that too. I'm just saying.
We will never
know.
It's
such an odd coin flip to analyze this from any. I'm not empathizing with this motherfucker. I mean, you kill people.
Oh, fuck him. I don't give a fuck what his last 50 years have been and how many drinks he's had. He can kind of suck it.
Which is fine. I'm just saying that if a reporter came to my door 50 years after I did the worst fucking thing I'd ever done in my entire life, I'd slam the door myself.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might go, let's talk about it. I was wrong.
Not after 50 years. You would have done it before. If you were going to do that, you would probably have done it before that.
But I'm not a murdering cop. Yeah. Cocksucker. Anyway, back to the film. So how does it end in the courtroom?
Not a murdering cop? Like I said, the opening sets up where you really feel for everyone. You get invested in all of their personalities. Then the second half is the brutality. It's got to be 45 minutes in that hotel easily, maybe an hour.
And now I will say this too. Again, this is Catherine Bigelow's great filmmaking. The third act is short because we already know we don't drag out a long court scene.
But again, we get a lot of objection, overruled. Yes. And we get a lot of the African-Americans who were in the hotel are on the stand. Like Larry gets, Larry's life is destroyed.
Right.
Larry, he's a promising singer. He's the leader of the Dramatics. The Dramatics are an actual band who then go on to have hits.
Yes. Right.
So he's the leader of the Dramatics. Well, his brother gets murdered in the hotel. He's beaten all night long. And one of the most obscene moments for me of the movie is the cops make them pray. The cops have them all up face against the wall and they go, "You better fucking pray." right now that I don't start killing all of you. And I mean loudly. So he makes everybody, every person, the white girls, the African-American guys, they're all praying loudly to their Jesus, their God. And they're the cops are laughing at them and going, you need to pray. And then this Larry character, who's the lead singer of the Dramatics, he literally starts singing. And he's singing almost a hymnal that he's making up on the spot. He gets on his knees and he's singing. And the cops point at him and they go, he's really fucking praying. And they start laughing. And you're sick then, because it makes sense to me later why he doesn't want to sing anymore.
Right.
Because
exactly.
He had to sing for his life, essentially.
Right.
And it's now associated in his brain with the death of his brother and the horrible torment and treatment. They made him, it was such a slavery moment.
Right.
Where it's like, dance, boy, do what we say.
Right.
And they all do. They have to. There's nothing else they can do.
So he doesn't stay with the band at the end. In fact, he sings in a church choir. And that's
And he basically goes, but before that, there's years of struggle where he's living in an apartment with a broken window. You see he's eating soup out of a pan with a wooden spoon. His life is crushed, is destroyed.
How much time do they spend on the sort of the recap and what happened between then, like showing that this guy didn't do the band, and like how much time do they spend?
It actually wasn't a lot of time.
You only get a couple of scenes, but they're packed full of information where you understand what's going
on. The purpose of the film, honestly, is a setup and a almost like a denouement for this horrible thing that happened at the Algiers. The heart of the movie is the scene in the Algiers, what actually happened. So you have kind of the setup to that and then the aftermath of that. But those things are almost like bookends. Mm. What Catherine Bigelow is really focusing your attention on the act itself in the middle of the film.
Yeah, which it's just sort of how she's handled stuff before.
It's, it's almost like you got the five heartbeats and then the verdict. sandwiched around Hostel.
Right.
Because
that's
it is
a weird but good way to put it. Yeah.
You just see these people with dreams and lives and what they want to be, and then you see them all completely come crashing down and they're destroyed. I mean, there's a scene where Anthony Mackie he's an airborne soldier, and they bring him in a room and they start beating him up, they tune him up. And they tell him he's a pimp. You're pimping out these white girls. And he's like, I'm not a pimp. Because why are you in Detroit? And he's like, I was in the Army. And they go, you probably drove a fucking supply truck. And he goes, I was airborne. Did two tours. But they still try to break him. Even when he gives the government ID, they go, all right, fine, yeah. And then they back off him a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because like, was airborne. But they still beat the shit out of him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And they're like, I don't like G.I. Joe for this. I think he's clean.
He's clean, yep.
But what happened, which was... the way it played out is the one suspect who shot the starter pistol was the first one that got murdered when he was running down the stairs. So there wasn't a suspect left for them to find.
Yeah, they weren't hiding anything really. Mm-hmm. They already killed the guy who had the starter pistol.
Right.
What they were trying to do, I think, like I said, the people in the house.
And they never found the pistol. That actually came up at the end too in a card. The pistol was never found.
Right. And let's talk about is it Boyega? Boyega? What's the name
John Boyega?
Yeah, John Boyega. He's
from Star Wars.
A really interesting character. We meet him when he first arrives at his house and his mom is there. And he's just come home from work and he takes a phone call and he has to go back to work. Mm-hmm. And his mom's like, you just got off work. He goes, Ma, two jobs, two bosses. I got to go back. They want me to guard because of the rioting. So he's guarding a grocery store from the rioters and the looters. So he's in full uniform with a shotgun. And we see him intervene once when the police are terrorizing an African-American youth in the street. Mm-hmm. And the African-American youth is all piss and vinegar. And he's like, fuck you guys, fuck you. And he comes over, he's like, oh, this is my nephew. And
he saves him from it.
Yeah, but the kid has no gratitude. He's like, thanks, Uncle Tom.
Yeah,
way
to
go,
man. Uncle Tom.
Yeah, because he wants him to stand up to the white cops with him. And he goes, hey, man, keep walking. Don't look back. I'm saving your life. And because Boyega is not, he's neutral good. All right, he just wants to make sure that any black person gets out unscathed.
Right.
He doesn't want to escalate. When the National Guard shows up, he brings them coffee.
Right.
And cups. And there's a great moment, too, where he brings them cups, and they all kind of look at him warily because he says, hey, look, I'm going to go tell them we're here because they're black men with shotguns. So he basically wants to go, hey, look, don't fucking put a bullet in me because we're guarding the grocery store across the street. But also, he realizes to ingratiate himself to the white guys is the only smart move.
Right.
So he brings over four cups. He's pouring them coffee, and it's white National Guardsmen in there. They try to ask him questions like he's the representative of all the African Americans. So he's like, all right. And the guy goes, this is pretty good coffee. And then one of the guys goes, you got any sugar? Like he's their fucking waiter. And the best part is he looks up and he goes, don't push it.
Yeah.
And it's the only moment in the movie he has any sort of I would say balls.
Right. Pushback.
Or yeah, pushback is a mm-hmm. much better word. Mm-hmm. Because he brings in the coffee and he's very ingratiating. Hands up. Hey, guys, where you were across the street.
Because they ask him, like, well, how long do you think this riding is going to last?
How long do you think these Negroes will be out here? Your people.
He's like, well, how should I know?
Yeah, it's great. It's you can just see.
It's a great scene.
And then he later, and again, his fate.
He gets a little bit lost in the
he's
in the
weird,
whole,
though. He's like a weird whole Greek chorus. Like, why are they letting him hang around at all?
Right, because he's a security guard. He's there as a witness to what happens at the Algiers, but he doesn't really affect the outcome much.
He's not a cop, and he doesn't get the respect of the cops.
Right.
But he's also not one of the black guys up against the wall. He's just, again, he's literally an observer. He just kind of floats around in the background, and he's involved in all of it. He also saves one of the guys who's about to get really tuned up, and he goes, no, I'll take him, because they're beating the shit out of him on the floor.
Right.
And they give him a knife. They beat up a suspect. They put him on the ground. They put a knife next to him. They go, you want to stab me, don't you? Why don't you pick it up? They go the Shane moment. You know, they go, hey, grab it. Why don't you want to stab me? And one of the cops is mouthing off. That cop looked like Dermot Mulroney slept with R.E. Gross.
And didn't take a shower for a week.
Yeah, oh my God. They were all just sweaty and fucking brutal. Because again, it really is this gritty, grimy, you imagine it's all taking place after 3 days of chaos.
Right.
And it's just it's a room full of people who haven't slept and the terrible things that can happen when people get out of control and give their lives over to just fucking doing whatever they want. Mm-hmm. It's a mess. I mean, it's just, and you see it unfolding. And like I said, it's shot very much like a horror movie, that center section, you know, where there's a scene where those two guys, like I said, they try to escape, Larry and his brother, and they run into a basement and there's flashlights going and there's a guy coming in through a door and then they see a face in a window, all like these little tiny jump scares, and they have to go back to the real horror.
Right.
You know, they escape into an actual horror movie, but then they have to go back to what they've been experiencing.
Right. Like even like the National Guard, you could see some of the young guys like, well, what do we do? Like how, you know, we weren't trained for this specific situation. Like, what are we supposed to do?
And like I said, it goes straight Stanford Prison Experiment, because the National Guard just follows the cops lead and they play the murder game. They do it. They beat up the suspects. They call them the N-word. They do all of that until a real murder happens. One of the National Guardsmen sees one of the cops shoot the other guy at point blank range, and then he goes,
let me get one of these guys out of here.
Yeah. And he goes and he saves one of the dudes in the other room, and then another guy saves that guy from the back, but the main National Guardsman goes, all right, we're leaving, we're done, and they split. They take off, and then they leave those people alone with the Detroit PD.
right.
And then even, dude, the Detroit PD realizes everything has gone to hell when they're one of their own murders that guy.
Finally, they're like, we got to get out of here.
So they take every suspect in and show them a dead body, and they go, what's that? And Anthony Mackie goes, I don't see nothing. He goes, right, you don't see nothing, you didn't hear nothing, go. And they let him go. Then they bring in Larry from the singer, and he goes, what do you see here? And he goes, I don't see nothing. And he goes, all right, you don't see nothing, go. And they bring in Larry's brother, and he goes, I see a dead man. And he goes,
Let's
try this again. And he pulls out his fucking revolver, and he goes, what do you see there on the floor? And he just goes, I see a dead man, and I know that you killed him. And he goes, all right. He executes him right there in the room.
Right. That was one of the other murders.
So that's the third guy who dies. That's what I'm saying. It's you see the naked, unbelievable horror and aggression.
Because you see weird like there's a couple moments like when that guy screws up the murder game and he kills one guy, like the head bad cop. He's like, what, you're so surprised that this happened? Like, oh, you're not supposed to kill them. Like, well, you just did. This is like
you're killing people.
Yeah, you're killing people all the time. Why are you so surprised?
Yeah.
So
and the white girl dynamic is, you know, they're two girls who are there, and they might be doing some prostitution to get some money, but they're also kind of hanging out just partying. Mm-hmm. Well, when the cops first descend upon the hotel, they're in the room with Anthony Mackie. They're just playing cards, and we haven't seen them do anything untoward. She made out a little bit with Larry, but they're just hanging out, drinking a little bit, having fun.
It's trying to they made it clear more that they're just there to kind of have fun and have a good time.
They're partying. They're in town from Ohio. Yeah, her dad's a judge.
Yeah, they're not prostitutes,
but they joke around about it.
Yes.
So it's like, but so then they're in the room with Anthony Mackie, and Anthony Mackie hears the cops coming upstairs, and he looks at the two white girls, he goes, put your hands on your head and don't say a word. And they go, what do you mean? He goes, do it, just do it right now. I'm telling you, put your hands on your head, don't say a word. And they all three of them do it, and then the cops come to the door and they go, put your hands on your fucking head. And they go, we already do. They kick in the door, two white girls on a bed, one black guy in a chair. They beat the shit out of the black guy, and they go, what are you two doing here? And then throughout, the reason the white girls are not treated, they're not treated completely differently from the black guys. They still get fallen in line because they're they're unpure.
Right, right,
right.
What are you doing with these guys? You don't like this. You like the smell of their Afro Sheen? Why are you fucking these guys? I mean, it's that's verbalized. It's not
what's
even
wrong with us.
There's no subtext.
Yeah,
he says, "What's wrong with us? Why do you want to fuck these ends?"
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, there's like I said, there's no, it's not subtext. It's not implied.
No,
the
no,
cops
it's
literally
there.
Say that to them. You like the smell of that Afro Sheen? You like that smell of that Afro Sheen on you? Like, I mean, it's nakedly, aggressively racist and terrible.
Well, here's something interesting that's from the LA Times article is so Anthony Mackie's character is the actual guy is Robert Green, and they never found him in the making of the movie. So they found some of these obviously character. There's what's his name? Hersey had a book. But they never found the guy, and they're hoping that maybe the release of the film is going to make him surface.
Oh, I see.
But he won't, they couldn't, like, they tracked down a lot. A lot of people were more than willing to, like, yeah, I'll tell you about that
right.
night. I'll tell you what happened. And
some people probably don't want to talk about it.
And this guy, they just couldn't, he was just like, nope, they couldn't. You know, they couldn't find her.
Well, you get the feeling that Larry doesn't ever want to speak of it again, but then he gets summoned. He has to testify, and then he testifies, and of course, they walk. The cops are completely acquitted.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about John Boyega's character again. They frame him.
Yeah.
John Boyega goes to jail. Initially, the cops bring him in, and they go, "You have a 38, don't you?" So
yeah.
he's the black security guard. He gets pinched and caught in the wash, and you see him, because again, all movie long, he's been this neutral, hey, everything's fine. When the cops are questioning him, he starts shaking, and he's like, I didn't, and he realizes he's just as black as everybody else. And
right.
And he wasn't ever, I never thought he was an Uncle Tom. He was literally just trying to be good. Let's all be good. Can we all
he
be
was
okay?
He's trying to save lives.
Exactly. Yeah. And then he winds up charged with the murders. And then the cops, the only reason the cops get pinched is because the doofus cop who looked like Jeff Richards from Saturday Night Live.
They
he's the one
who flipped.
Yeah, he flips in the office, and then the other dude flips, and they come out and they talk to Krause, and Krause goes, "You motherfuckers!" And that the best part is Krause goes to run. He goes, "You talked," and he runs and he gets in a cop car, and you see the homicide detective running out after him, and the homicide detective puts his hand. He goes, "I don't have anything to say without my lawyer." And he goes, "Give me a break, you racist fuck! Get out of the car before I break your fucking neck." Mm-hmm. And I clapped. I was just like, "This is a good, yeah." Me and then like two other people, like, "Yeah, Lenny," my brother Lenny. It was just like, "Yeah, fuck yeah, finally somebody says or does the right thing." Finally,
mm-hmm.
It's this weird release in seven words.
Right.
And you're rooting and waiting, even though you know they're going to go to court and never get fucking put in jail.
Right.
But at least you get some relief in for 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a claustrophobic that whole scene in the hotel. And also the makeup work, I would give Oscars if we do that sort of thing for makeup or whatever, because the bruising is steady. Yeah. Like, they're all unmarked. And then as they're getting beaten up and as they're getting hit, eyes are swelling and cheekbones
are
reddening.
It's all realistic, yeah.
I mean, it's over real time. You see all of a sudden an eye is swelling shut. I mean, it's just because they're getting beaten constantly and shoved into walls and told to turn around and shut the fuck up. And who do you think you are? And I will kill all of you. Literally, there's not, again, like I said, there's no vagaries. There's no, "Well, you guys better tell us or you don't know what'll happen." He's literally, "I will put bullets in your head. Where's the gun? You will be murdered. I will." And then they do the fake thing where they murder guys in the other room. He tells them flat out, "I will kill everybody here until you tell me." And then they start picking them off one by one.
Right.
And so they realize we're going to die in here. We are going to die in here. It's that's why I mean by claustrophobic, and also the realization of they know, even if they were to say, because once the first guy's dead, who they saw, they know Carl's dead. If they say, "Well, it was a starter pistol, we were just fucking around," they're just going to execute everybody.
Right.
And because they can't have it getting out that they shot a guy for a starter pistol. They all know they're dead from the jump.
Because they get acquitted because it's like, "Oh,
it's every single cliche you could ever imagine. You know what I mean? And then all of every black person who testifies gives a real calm reading of what took place in the room. And they bring up all their priors and all their past crimes and how many times they went to jail and what did they, you know, basically what were you wearing? Were you asking for it?
Right.
They all get that. Finally, I'd like to know if that's real. One black witness flips on the stand and goes, "Fuck you. I'm not talking anymore. Fuck you. Why are you asking about me? They killed my friends. Why are you?" And he gets escorted out of the courtroom. And a cop stands up to kind of body him. And he goes, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do?" Because the courtroom is half blue, half black.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's literally all family and friends and African-Americans, and then all cops in uniform.
Right.
And when they are announced not guilty on the assault, not even guilty of assault, dude.
Right.
And then they get acquitted of the murders, and it's half horrified and half... Like the cops all jump and they're all shaking hands, and it's just this, it's football. It's our team won, your team lost again.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not sugarcoated in any way.
No.
But that's it's an important film. I think everyone should see it. I hope the marketing can really ramp up a little bit so more people can see it. I'm worried that this will be like a Fruitvale Station where it never gets the marketing push that it deserves.
Right.
So more people can see it. So I'm hoping word of mouth.
It's a hard sell. I mean, you're literally saying, hey, go watch this textbook.
Because
again, like I said, the first 30 minutes, there's singing and there's brightness and there's hope.
Right.
And then hope is steadily.
Although at the same time, there's also rioting and,
of course,
you know, and all those.
It's all contrasted. Too. But again, but hope isn't just lost in this movie. Hope
right.
is beaten to death. Hope is dragged outside and tied to a car and dragged down a dirt road.
To give you an idea, again, I'm going to read from this excerpt in the L.A. Times. They interviewed Julie Delaney, who was one of the.
She's the one who gets the gun butt in the face.
Yeah. And she said, so I'll just read this. She goes, Delaney, then a teenager, had joined up with Malloy and filed some bands in Detroit in the summer of 67. They're at the Algiers because it only cost barely $10 a night. Now in her late 60s and a hairdresser on Hollywood set, she had come from her home in the South for a rare return trip to where the trauma had occurred. She took it all in. Right there is where you registered, and this was the pool, and this is the breezeway between the maid building and the annex where it all happened. She let the memories filter through. People were begging for their lives. I just kept thinking, they killed three people. There's one person they haven't taken. Then I'm next. I remember the voice of the cops yelling again and again and again. She said, you know what happens in the movie is like the Smurfs compared to what really happened.
Wow.
Which, the way you guys describe it, and that, which to me says, like, I give... Sounds like, again, it's why Kathryn Bigelow is a fantastic director, because obviously the person who went through it...
It's going to be magnified 100
times. You're never going to match what they went through.
Of course not, no.
But if you as the... It shows you, you know, that...
If as an audience you feel a piece of that, the filmmaker's done their job.
Yeah, and it sounds like Bigelow did.
And this woman is portrayed in the film, like you said, she's a teenager, but she also stands up to the cops because she realizes she has a bit of white privilege that others don't. So she tries... And even though she gets a gun butt in the face and she's able to mouth off... They slap her around,
right.
But the cop even says to her, what are you doing in a room with them? Why are you in a room with him? And she literally goes, it's 1967.
Right.
Like, we should be past this by now. And I even the irony of that line, I just went, oh, Christ. Because you know there are dudes out there who will be like, why are you in a room with these guys? Why are you at this concert?
In 2017.
Of course.
Right.
50 years later, there are people who still feel like that.
Yeah, and they're
it's
on
astonishing.
Facebook.
Well, yeah. They're all over the place. They're all over the place.
Yeah, I know.
And all you can hope is that they get outnumbered eventually. That's all you can hope.
Right. Right, or there's something they slowly wake up, or their kids wake up, or
so,
something happens. It's slowly just people start thinking differently.
So if you're listening to this, you've already seen the film, and you've had the impact that it's had on you, I'm sure. I know some of you listen to it without seeing the film just to get a little more in-depth and insight into it, but if you're one of those people, definitely go see the film now that you've heard us
Not a tenured performance in it. Let's put it this way. When you leave a movie, movies are movies, and you can go, oh, that was a film or whatever. You love the people in this movie that you love. You root for the people you're rooting for, and you hate the people you hate. And there's no – some people would say you would need ambiguity in this sort of portrayal. Well, when you see the horror that's put on
screen –
There's
no ambiguity there.
It's not necessary because it's clear a delineation who are the bad guys and who are the good guys.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm glad the story is being told. I'm glad it's like I knew about Detroit riots. I mean, you sort of vaguely know, but this specific thing at the Algiers.
This is a specific incident in that kind of setting of what was going on at the time.
Because sometimes, you know, we talk about a lot of period pieces on this show, and there's some great ones that come out. But sometimes a period piece feels like, oh, Hollywood. Would rather talk about, like, they'll greenlight that story from 50, 60, 100 years ago versus talk about stuff that's really happening right here, right now. And so when you can find a story like this that relates directly to what's going on right now, there's a new documentary coming out called Whose Streets, which is about Ferguson. It's about, I think it revolves mainly around a woman that it was like an organizer in the protests after Michael Brown was killed in Ferguson. And so... Those kind of stories need to be told, but you also need to hear those stories and have the knowledge of this actual event that happened 50 years ago.
Right.
And I applaud that it's being made, and I applaud that, like we talked about at the top of the show, that or at the other episode, maybe the $34 million budget is a good thing.
It's all up on the screen. No one got $20 million for this movie.
Right. But the horror, the true horror behind a piece like this is when you watch it and you, and like we said, you need to shine lights on incidents like this. Mm-hmm. But when you realize there are thousands of incidents like this that have not had lights shown upon it. Mm-hmm. And you just see the horror and terror that went into this one night with this group of people. And you realize that was happening then. It's happening now. It does not stop. And you wonder what you can do to try to work against this sort of terror or horror or ignorance. And you don't know what to do. And it's frustrating. And it's a frustrating movie to watch because, like I said, it's once the, once the tension and the gripping nausea of the hotel scene ends and it goes in courtroom mode, it's just beats and boilerplate because you go, all right, well, this is going to happen and they're going to make them look stupid. And they're going to get off. And you're just throwing your hands in the air going, can logic win out once? Could it ever win out?
I think we got there quicker, too, like we were saying.
Oh, yeah.
The heart of the movie is the middle.
I think to answer your question, Mike, what can we do to do this? I think America, and it starts with every person individually. We talked about this, I remember, after the election a little bit when we had J.B. Updike on and we did the either the 13th spoiler app, I believe we did with him, or I Am Not Your Negro. But and those two movies, especially I Am Not Your Negro, I would recommend watching if you haven't. America needs to stop living in denial. America is living in huge denial. America needs to sit down and go, you know what? We are a racist, violent country, and we need to do something about it. We are not addressing guns. We are not addressing mental illness. We are not addressing the race issue. We are not addressing any of these things. We keep wanting to think it's this little incident, it's this little thing, or this little community, and we don't want to address it across the board, right? We just don't want to admit it. America wants to still think that we're the good guys.
Well, movies like this will help with that for sure. I'm hoping movies like this
I can't accept that America is a racist country. There are racist elements, and certainly the people in power are unfortunately doing everything they can to.
Mike, how can you say you can't? The whole country
because there's
is
enough.
Racist.
There's a lot of people who are also fighting against it or sure, are trying
but,
to
but
change
that's,
it.
I'm not discounting when I say America is a racist country. I'm not discounting the people that are fighting against it. But I'm saying the problem is we don't want to admit that by and large, societally, institutionalized, and culturally, we have serious racism in this country.
Of course.
But until we admit that, if we keep going, well, not everyone's bad.
We have work to do.
We can't keep saying that, like, well, not everyone, it's little groups. Uh-uh. This is a very racist country. This is a country where if a white supremacist kills somebody on a train, he's not called a terrorist. He's called a
lone gunman. Language, it's all there's a war of everything going on.
Any of that, we don't want to deal with it, and I think we need to, like, I to quote James Baldwin, and I'm Not Your Negro. He goes, America's as a sickness, America's a brutal place, like it's, and we keep thinking these are isolated incidents. Fuck, two people were shot last weekend in my nice beach neighborhood, right? So,
where were you,
Santa Monica?
No, where were you?
None of your business, Mike. What I do on my time during my birthday weekend is how
this didn't make the papers. How do you know about this incident?
You know what I did for my birthday? Maybe I acted out a little death wish. Maybe that's what I did. Maybe I'm keeping the streets clean. But you know what I mean? I think America just needs to sit down and go, wow. We're out there. We're in 7 or 8 wars because we need oil. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we need, no, America doesn't want to face any of it. We don't want to know how the sausage is made.
Have you talked about any of this on your other show?
Every fucking episode. And that's why I have a loyal following.
Yes. So any closing thoughts on the film? I think we've covered it pretty thoroughly.
I think people need to see it. It's a hard watch.
It's a hard watch.
It's made
no
incredibly well, and it's something, but it's a story that needs to be told. Unfortunately, it's a story you're going to say in your head. You go, I've seen this. I've seen this. Right. I'm going to keep seeing it. But until it's fixed, you got to keep shining lights on it and pointing these things out.
And also, just from a filmmaking perspective, the way it's set up, the way it brings you through the story and into this world, it's just really solid filmmaking.
I saw a great word used. Muscular was the word that they used about Kathryn Bigelow's directing in this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's
forceful.
No punches are pulled. No. Right. No feelings are spared. Mm-hmm. You see all of it. I mean,
she's
it's just all up there.
She's a solid director.
She's on a short.
She's a monster.
Of,
yeah, it's
of amazing
it's gorgeous.
Directors.
So it's something. I think everyone should see this film. It's a really good film. It like I said, there's different movies that put this into perspective. Like you could say, Hidden Figures also tackles racism, but in a much different way, and a much more sanitized way. But it still tackles racism. It's still a very important film. Whereas this movie is just brutal and visceral and in your face about racism at a specific time in our country's history. I think these are the types of movies that deserve a larger marketing push. But I think, honestly, I think this movie will get a larger marketing push, not now, but come award season.
Well, I also hope just social media, I hope enough people watch it and spread the word online.
Again, tough watch. It's a tough watch.
It's and not also a movie I think I could see again. it's one of those movies. All right, I've seen it. I don't think I need to see this
and
movie
a, and
again.
A real challenge, I think, is because it hits so close to home with actual incidents that have just recently taken place.
Yes.
There's a lot of fatigue out there from people who are just like, I can't again. I can't with this.
Right.
Because I have to admit, even that flashed through my head last night when I'm watching it, I'm going, I've seen this story and I know
and that
the
could
ending
be part
and I
of
fucking
it.
Hate it.
And that could be part of the reason where, you know, it didn't do as well opening weekend.
Yeah. Well, you know why? Because you could watch this movie in 45-second clips on YouTube just
oh, yeah.
with different
right.
people starring in each clip.
Right. And you could just watch the news. Oh, here's this cop. And just type in acquitted cops, you know, and just see the 12 cops. You know what I mean? Like a guy got choked for selling cigarettes to death.
And I would recommend, yes, Googling that because do not put in menaced dramatics because you will not get nearly as many hits on that if you're looking for something relating to this film.
So, all right. Well, that is our episode. Spoiler ep.
Spoiler up 61. Mike Schmidt, where can people find you?
You guys can get me at Mike at MikeSchmidtComedy.com. I'm at Facebook.com/the40-year-old boy. I'm at Twitter.com/the40-year-old boy. And you can find me at Snapchat and Instagram for some reason. I'm going to go to jail eventually for being on Snapchat.
You look very confused. Just, like, did like a nephew sign you up for Snapchat?
I like the picture of the ghost and then I put it on my phone and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, is this what this is about? It's literally, Snapchat just mocks old people because it's text. It's text that disappears. So then you don't remember what it said. It reminds you that your failing memory is just prevalent in your life.
How long does it last? Isn't it like almost?
You can choose. It can be 5 seconds. It can be 10 seconds or whatever, and that sort of thing. And it's made to send your cock to people. I always tell people that all the time. Basically, no, I don't use it for that. Certainly, so please
checked.
Add me. But I'm Mike 4OYOB on Instagram and on Snapchat.
Yeah, hashtag right. Mike's cock. thank you, Aaron Brungardt, on the ones and twos for doing a fine, fantastic job of the All Things Comedy Bunker in studio. And, yeah, check out Detroit. I guess anything else?
No, and look for the
sorry.
The kidnap spoiler.
Sorry. Yeah. Watch Detroit. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be doing a kidnap spoiler up, covering some different themes.
Yes.
And all right. Thank you, Mike Schmidt. Thank you, Aaron. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.